Hello, world.
Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Hello, world. This is Pamela Lockridge with the Stop Child Abuse Now radio show, sponsored by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, scan number 2643. And tonight we have a very special guest from Littleton, Colorado. Before we get to her story, I'm going to ask my co-host, Penelope, to talk about the mission of the NASTA.org.
Well, thank you, Pam. Yes, thank you, Pamela, so much. So before I read the mission statement, I would like to encourage anybody who's streaming right now who wishes to be a part of the panel to call in. You can call in anytime during the 90-minute show. The number to call in is 646-595-2118. Again, that number is 646-595-2118. And as the co-host, I will greet you offline and bring you into the show. And even if you've never called in before, it is no experience is necessary. I will walk you through it. So without further ado, I want to talk to you a little bit about NASCA, which stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. And NASCA is all about child abuse trauma prevention, intervention, recovery. We have a single purpose at NASCA: to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas and neglect, and we do so with two goals. The first, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. And the second goal, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, recovery. So again, if you'd like to call in and be a member of the panel to ask our special guest a question, the number to do that is 646-595-2118. Thank you, Pamela.
Muting myself because I'm coughing sometimes. Before I bring our special guest on, I just want to tell the guest how our show goes. And it's usually done in three segments, and then we go to the panel between each segment. And the panel, whoever's on the panel right now, we don't have much of a panel, but I've asked some people to call in and interface with Kim tonight and support her as she tells her story, which is like all of us as survivors here, and all of our stories are quite impactful. And but the segment is, we're going to ask her to start in her earliest years, tell us about her family, and tell when her childhood abuse started. We're going to see if she'll take us up to around her 17th, 18th birthday. Then we'll go to the panel. Then we'll come back and go to when she became an adult, and those years, and if she got married, and, you know, if the abuse continued or stopped. And then we'll go to the third segment. We'll go to the panel, and then we'll go to the third segment. She'll tell us what she's doing today and and where she's at on the healing journey. So without further ado, I'm going to bring Kim Lakin on from Littleton, Colorado. Kim, your
Hi,
mic is
you.
Open.
Okay,
Hi.
Thank you. Thank you for
thank
having
you.
Me.
Okay. You're so welcome. Me and Penelope know how it is when you first tell your story. I think you've been on NASCA before, right?
Yeah, I have. I've been on
okay.
a couple of times. Yeah.
Well, then you're a NASCA
it's been a little
family
while.
Member. Yeah. So you're a returning NASCA family member. That's what we call you. So let's get started with your story. And, you know, if you get nervous or triggered or can't answer a question, we fully understand, okay? So can you start at your earliest memory in your family and what kind of family you were raised in?
Sure. So I was the oldest. My mom had me when she was 16 years old. So she was very young. She ran away when she was 15, actually, and got married to my biological dad. And then they had me about a year later. And then she finished high school, and she went on to become a paralegal. So then my brother was born about 2 years later. And shortly after she got pregnant with him, she decided to leave my biological dad. And so they left. We were living at the time in South Dakota. That's where I was born, Rapid City, South Dakota, and moved out to Colorado. And my biological dad is from Arkansas. So I have a bunch of family members in Arkansas that we went back and saw quite a bit. So I was telling Pamela earlier that I just love her accent because it makes me kind of feel like my Arkansas family. So that makes me feel welcome. I like that. But, so I was pretty much raised in Colorado. My mom divorced my biological dad by the time she was 20 and started her new life out here in Colorado with her mom. Her mom had moved here, and my mom's sister was just a couple years older than me. So, you know, when I first moved out here, we lived with my grandma for quite a while, and then we lived close by. We weren't too far pretty much until we went to high school. And so my aunt and I grew up kind of more like sisters than, you know, aunt. But I still call her Aunt Candace, and I don't know why. Maybe it's just because I like to get people's reaction when they're with us. They're like, what? But it's kind of neat to have that. I have just a little brother, so it was nice to have a sister too. And when I was probably about 5 is when my abuse started. And then I was introduced through a church who came around and picked up children, and my grandma kind of facilitated getting my aunt and I picked up on Sunday mornings. And so I was introduced to Jesus at a really young age, which I just, you know, I now look back and I say, you know, God knew that what I needed. He knew that I needed to have him in my life and kind of have that foundation, because there was a lot that would go on in my life from there forward. So shortly after I started going to church, then my appendix ruptured. And so I remember just, you know, I don't remember all the pain and everything. It's hard to remember all the details of that. But I do remember being in pain, and I remember continuing to tell my parents. Well, by this time, my mom was remarried to my stepdad. So I kind of left that part out too. So she met him when I was about 3, And then they were living together. And then shortly after that, they got, a year or so after that, they got married. So my mom and my stepdad and my brother and I were all living together. And they kept saying, I kept saying, you know, my stomach hurts, and crying to my mom. And so she'd take me to the doctor. And I think it took a couple months is what I'm told before the doctors finally figured it out. And that's, you know, by that time I was getting septic, and it was a pretty bad experience. So I had that trauma going on, and I had just been sexually assaulted. But the doctors kept saying, you know, at first it must just be in her head. And I now, as I'm older, I'm thinking, well, yeah, there was that going on. There was a lot going on in my head because I had just been sexually abused, and then by a neighborhood child, and then my, you know, I'm going through all of this trauma. So there was a time when I was younger that I remember, and I just like to tell the story because it points to where I was at really in my faith, and at such a young age, even at 7 years old, the elders at the church had heard that I had gone, you know, through surgery. And so they came to my house, and I remember laying on the couch, and I was, you know, just laying there recovering because it took a good, well, I came home with a drain in my stomach, so they couldn't even get to my appendix. It was so bad. And then I had to go back in and have surgery again. So I was laying on the couch, and the elders came to the door, and my dad told them that he didn't want them to come in and pray with me. And I remember just thinking, that really hurt my heart, because I thought, I'm being taught, you know, so this was kind of the beginning of that confliction of, you know, I'm being taught at Sunday school that Jesus loves me and that we should pray to him and have a personal relationship with him. And then, you know, then when I'm at home, what I have is still to the public, everybody thinks that everything is okay. But behind the scenes, my dad was on heroin until I was 12 years old. And my mom, I don't know that she did a whole lot of that, but she did some other stuff for sure. And so their weekends were spent partying. And, you know, I say that it was that time of their life. They were in their early 20s and they were partying, but they forgot that they had little children around that they needed to take care of. And so, you know, I was left to kind of be the mom to my little brother, and kind of took care of him a lot. I remember him just being my little baby doll. But after I had recovered from the surgery, which, like I said, took quite a while because I was at home for 6 weeks. So I was out most of my second grade year and missed most of that. And so by the time I went to third grade, I was pretty far behind, and then I was held back, which was another trauma in my life. Like, that really kind of hurt, just because you do start about that age, start getting into your little friend groups. And so, but we had then, after my surgery had, you know, been over and everything, we moved a few blocks away from the boys that I we'll talk about a little bit too, who abused me, which were neighborhood friends, as I said before. And so I felt a little safer, except then I started getting found. And a lot of times this happened when I was playing hide and seek with my cousins. I would have some male cousins who would always find where I was hiding and, you know, try and take advantage of me. And, you know, I think that there was a point in my life that I thought, okay, this is just the way it is. You know, I think that I had been kind of groomed from the time I was little, even with the neighborhood boys, that I, you know, I just thought that that's what girls do then, you know, to just let boys take advantage of them. You know, so I think I had a little bit of that mindset of this is odd. But, you know, so I think I was sexualized at a young age. And so then by 12 years old, you know, I really wanted to have a boyfriend who, you know, wanted to make out and stuff, and some of the 12-year-olds are going, we're just getting into girl, you know, maybe not yet. Maybe we'll just take this slow. But I then was abused when I was about 12 by my stepdad. And that was really, really hard, just knowing that he wanted to be my dad and he was getting ready to adopt us. And I remember thinking, you know, this man wants to legally be my dad. Why is he doing this to me? And this happened many times, probably about 6 times. And then it did stop. So I was told that he felt also that because I said when I went in to be adopted, that I would like to be adopted by him, that he should not be doing that to me. And so he quit. But it's a scar that you hold with you. And even today, I still have a relationship with him. He is in my life, but he is, you know, there are a lot of boundaries. And I've been able to set those and keep those pretty, pretty good, you know, pretty tight throughout our life. It's been really tough. My mom, we moved away. I keep going forward.
Yeah. Let's kind of slow down just a little bit here. I think going to the panel helps us do that. So you've given us a lot of information. And, you know, we're sorry, number one, that it happened to you, but we understand, and we're here to support you because we've all been through it, okay? Our stories aren't exactly the same, but we all have similar stories and, you know, the abuse that steals our childhood, makes us feel like we're nothing but sex objects, you know,
right.
Fear. Were you ever threatened not to tell by anybody?
That, you know, I don't remember that specifically. I remember the little boys that I have mentioned, the boys that when I was younger and up until I was an adult, actually, I thought that those boys were teenagers. And I used to always say these teenagers. And then I reconnected with a friend of mine who was a cousin, who was my friend back then and I was playing with. When these incidents happened, and she told me that they were only like 3 and 6 years older than I am. And so that just kind of tells me that, you know, there's such a power difference. There was a power difference, even though it wasn't age, it was the way that they were acting.
You gotta wonder where they got the sexuality and sexualized, you know, at that
exactly.
Young age.
Well, yeah, no, it was in their family. You know, it was happening within their family, and you know, one of the stories I've told in a testimony that I'm able that I was just in that I was blessed to be in a book is one of the stories is I was when that incident happened with when I was 5 years old. I was just playing, and I was having a sleepover at my friend's house. And it was those boys' house as well, their cousins. She lived with her cousins. And he grabbed me in a closet, and I wanted to get away. So I knew that I didn't want to do what he wanted to do. And so I ran. And then when I ran out, I saw my friend being abused. And I remember thinking in my 5-year-old mind, instead of I need to run home and tell my parents what just happened, I thought my friend is more mature than I am because she is sitting there and taking this. So when in reality, like you just said, it was all of them have been abused. And so it wasn't really new to them. It was new to me. It was my first experience. But it wasn't new to them.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So they couldn't help you because they were all into it themselves. Right.
Exactly. Right. And my friend didn't exactly know what happened either. She didn't even know. She didn't know that until we connected again. I don't know. It's probably been 7 years or so ago that we connected on the phone and started talking about our stories, but we had never talked about it, of course, as children. And then when I was 14, I moved away, and she moved away actually before that. She moved to California. And so so we had never shared that until we were adults.
When we're abused as children and we know other children that were abused like we were at the same time, that is a bond that is never broken between friends, you know?
Penelope? Yeah.
Kim, I'm going to go to Penelope, our co-host, and see what comments or questions she has.
Oh, thank you, Pamela. And by the way, Kim, I'm not sure if Pamela mentioned you. I didn't hear her mention this, but your panel's grown. And you've got, besides myself, you have Susan Glandon from Alabama and Mary Ellen from New York. So you've got a lot of support on the show here in terms of the panel. And I know them both, and if you don't know them, they're really wonderful women. So I'm excited to have them here this evening. First of all, the first thing that strikes me, you know, as I'm hearing your story is you are amazing and strong and resilient. And I'm hearing that even from, you know, at 5 years old. That's really striking me that, and really, I know that kids have, you know, children have a really innate sense of justice, but you were introduced to the church and to the teachings of, you know, your Christian faith, and you were able at such a young age to say, wait a second, something's off. I think it's very unusual. You're very, perceptive, you know. That struck me as also just being really unusual in a good way, right? That not good that these things happen to us, but I think from early on, if you can just discern that this is not right and have that sense of justice, I think that helps, you know, us when we head towards that healing process to know that there's somewhere else we could be. And I'm just making, a few comments on what you said. The other thing that really struck me before I asked the question, if I can remember it, in terms of just you having to care for your little brother, kids need to be kids, right? Kids,
right.
It's abuse. I mean, you to assume the responsibility of mothering at such a young age is so damaging. And I'm with you in the fact that I was physically abused. I was sexually abused at a young age by a family member. But to me, the most impactful and traumatic, emotional wounds, deep wounds for me were having to mother at such a young age.
Mm-hmm.
When you're already being sexually abused, you're already bankrupt, right? And then you have to give some more. So I just, my heart goes out to you because I just know what that's like. And I totally forgot my question. And it was, I do remember my question. So with your stepfather, I just can't, how many men stop themselves in their tracks and take ownership of something that's wrong and then change their behavior? Profound. But I'm also curious, was your mother aware that this was going on at its inception or at any time during the duration of the abuse?
I guess she would say no. She's no longer here to ask. And I didn't really start on this journey before she passed away. Mm. It's been almost 17 years now since she's gone. And so, I've never really asked her that. I think that there was a perception of, in her mind, well, I know there is because she told me this at one point when I was a little bit older, when I was 15 and I finally told her what had happened. She told me that it happens. So it was this perception in her mind that I think a lot of people just kind of fall into because they don't know what to do is, oh, it's just going to happen. This happened to me. This happened to her mom, my grandma, you know, and probably has been in generational, not with the same perpetrator, but it's the not doing anything about it that is keeping that going within the family. And so when I told her, she made that choice, which was very damaging as well. At 15, she made the choice to tell me, oh, it just happened, and she chose him over me. And now I don't know, and I got very rebellious, by the way, at that point. Ran away several times and had a baby at 18 or 19. So, I felt very betrayed and, you know, like, she's not going to stick up for me. And so when I got pregnant with my daughter at 18, I thought, again, you know, as you're saying, I'm having these perceptions. I think a lot of them have come later. I think I just did things that I felt were right. And then later on, I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm going to make this decision not to let this happen to my daughter. I will do whatever it takes. And I think more so, you know, my oldest daughter is 33 now and has three kids of her own. So, you know, 33 years ago, of course, there wasn't a whole lot of, there wasn't tools out there that could teach you how to talk to your children and what to do. And so I was kind of that mom. Sometimes I say I'm a helicopter mom, but I wasn't in the way that I did let my kids have some freedom, but I always knew what they were doing. You know, I was, and I had a husband too that ended up, you know, wanting to know where they were too. And so he would, you know, spy on them once in a while. So we were a good team in that way that, you know, we just wanted to know where they were and what was going on at all times. And which is still important. And I still tell parents that when I do classes, I do, which we'll talk a little bit about as we go along too. But, you know, just,
We have more people on the Thank you. So let's go down to Susan from Alabama, see what she wants to say or ask. Susan?
Sure. Hey, hi, guys. And I'm listening to your story, and I'm practically holding my breath because it kind of mirrors a lot of my own experience, a stepfather. And what two things are different, though. My stepfather almost started immediately, like at age 3, when he married my mom, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then I probably got him to stop, really, when I was a young teen, okay? Mm-hmm. So you said he didn't touch you or anything until you were 12 years old. But were there, like, little grooming things that happened along the way? And then when you did tell your mom, did you have, like, did some post-traumatic stress make you do it? Like, were you having weird thoughts or feelings or, you know?
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. When I told her, I had just been caught trying to sneak out of the house to go meet my boyfriend late at night. and I was thrown through a wall. And so I decided at that time that was the time that I needed to tell her exactly what had happened. But it wasn't right that he was actually, you know, that he was also physically abusing me, which he had done before. You know, it wasn't anything real new. But at that point, I think I was just getting rebellious enough that I was like, okay, this is going to, you know, I'm going to tell her what happened. The grooming, yeah. I would have to say yes. I don't remember a whole lot of the grooming process. But now that I know what I know, for sure. I remember before it happened with him talking very openly. Our family... And that was what was a little bit confusing also about those boys, because our family was pretty open anyway, as far as, you know, not covering up real well around the house. And so when I saw this happening over at my friend's house, which one of them was just, you know, the boys walking around with their zippers undone, you know, and things hanging out. And, you know, I would just try and look away. And so I'm sure that there were those types of grooming things that I wasn't really paying attention with my dad either. But it was just, he was just my dad. I mean, he was really the only dad that I knew growing up.
Yeah, me too.
Because
me
my
too.
Biological dad had left. So,
And
yeah,
was there
sure
alcohol as well as the drugs? Was there, like, there's a lot of alcohol. My dad didn't do anything like that. My stepdad didn't do the heroin or anything, but he was such an alcoholic, raging alcoholic.
No, I'm sorry.
I mean, functioning alcoholic, don't get me wrong. He had a great job, and he made a good living, and we owned a home and that kind of thing. But alcoholic, just the same. Partying on the weekends, when you were saying partying on the weekends, and we were young children, oh, yeah.
It didn't matter what we were doing, or they didn't even know where we were most of the time. But
right.
But, no, they did more of the drugs. They did more drugs. They smoked pot and, you know, dipped probably coke, and I know that he did heroin, like I said, up until that point. And also, about the time that that had happened with me, then they had started talking about, and then he had quit, and then he had adopted us. We started talking about moving away. And I think that there was a change in my mom at that point, and she was saying, this is going to stop. And I think that part of probably our move as well, looking back, was so that she could get him away from, like, all the drugs and everything. And they still smoke pot all their lives. My dad still does, too. But, you know, the harder stuff they got away from, and they quit doing that. And that was, you know, probably some of what I was experiencing, the abuse, once we moved to Washington, was probably him detoxing off of all the heroin.
Right, right.
It wasn't good. He could get pretty violent without drinking. We didn't.
And I have another question for you. Like, I know I have engaged in counseling at different times and pretty extensively from my 20 to 30. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it's 12-step programs or you know, when I was in college, you know, I went to a counselor, you know, quite a bit because it was wonderful and free. But now, you know, I really kind of didn't realize this until just recently, like in the last couple of months, I had another little breakthrough that, you know, I struggle with self-worth, and I don't have to be around my tormentor anymore because he passed away years ago. So, you know, I mean, I missed the first 8 minutes of your discussion.
Oh, okay.
And I was just wondering if, you know, have you gone out and had counseling or any kind of programs or no, you've not, because, you know, hearing you talk, I mean, it feels like you're like a little bit nervous talking about it, you know?
Yeah.
And so
sure.
I was just curious.
Well, yeah. No, I'm just nervous. Yeah.
Yeah. This Pamela, that's going to come later in the show. So
okay.
Keep that question.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
Okay.
I wasn't trying to fast forward this. I just, you know, I look forward to hearing about that. Okay.
Yes.
We will get to that. We will get to that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Susan, for your questions and comments.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Susan. And I'm sorry, everything. It breaks my heart, too, every time I hear a story. I know that probably most of the people on this panel and who are listening, a lot of them have gone through this, and it really does break my heart. And so,
well,
I'm glad
now
there are tools out.
Now you're on cam with Mary Ellen from New York. Mary Ellen?
Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Hi, Mary Ellen.
Can you hear me?
Hi.
Hi. Yes. thank you for sharing your time with us tonight. I missed the first couple of minutes, but that's okay. You've done a great job, and I'm really looking forward to hearing the rest of your story. And I really don't have a question right now, so I don't want to take up your time. So,
oh, well, nice to meet you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you for coming.
You're
on.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Mary, for being on the panel. Okay, I'm going to... Yeah, thank you. We really appreciate you calling to support Kim. Okay, Kim, we're going to go back to your story. And do you remember where you left off and where you want to pick it back up, or do you want
to... I think
to...
so, yeah.
Okay.
I think it was...
Sure.
Yeah, it was probably around the time that... talking about being really boy crazy, and we were getting ready to go to Washington, and so I think that's kind of where I was at with that. I, you know, it's interesting because a lot of times we do hear this later on as well, but you just hear of all the different people in your life maybe that have gone through the same thing as you, and like, as we were saying earlier, a lot of I connected with a lot of friends who, of course, were going through abuse as well. And one of my good friends, who was in Colorado before we left, really wanted me to have sex. And I hadn't had sex yet before we left for Washington. And I don't know what it was about it, but it didn't happen. But it was just kind of, it just kind of strikes me funny, you know, looking, not funny, haha, but, you know, sad, buddy, looking back that, you know, at such a young age, we were looking for that and we really were craving that affection. And so, yeah, when I was by my dad and I was confused and I did get really boy crazy. And by the time we got to Washington State, I, you know, found a boyfriend right away, connected, and, you know, kind of starting getting a little rebellious, skipping school. Oh, that's what else I was going to say. I was going to talk a little bit about just my brother real quick and say that I had talked to him a few years ago, and he had never been abused that way. But what I found out also, which I kind of knew, but I didn't know really the details of it, and him and I had a really good talk just like a couple months before he passed away, which it's been three and a half years now since he died, and which is still really hard. That's still a hard one. And
bless your heart.
Thank you. Yeah, it's still hard. And I am in counseling all the time, so I am. I'm still working through all of this stuff. But, yeah, he was not abused, but in sexually. But at a young age, we were both given marijuana. And how my brother remembers it is, yeah, they would give it to me so I would go downstairs and go to sleep. You know, so I would go leave him alone, basically. And his bedroom was always in the basement, and mine was always, you know, right by my parents. So I think I got into more trouble, probably because I was just around more. And, you know, that's how they would get rid of him when they were partying and stuff. And I think, like I said, I would be around a little bit more, and a lot of times they would let me be around more. So, you know, if there were friends who brought brought kids over, then it was kind of my thing to entertain them. And so we would go play hide and seek outside or, you know, go do that stuff that we did. But there was I was going to say about that.
That's really great that your brother, I know you felt real relief when you found out he wasn't abused.
Yeah. Yeah, I really did.
Tell us about your school, like when you were in high school and beyond. Like, did you go to college, and how did you feel
I did not.
During those years?
Okay. I didn't.
You got married.
Yeah, so I got married kind of young. I was 18 when I got pregnant with my daughter, and that was with my high school boyfriend. We didn't go to school a whole lot in high school. And that was my real rebellious time. That was the time that, you know, I had told my mom, and she had told me basically this is the way it is. And then I had met my boyfriend, who actually was a good friend of my cousin. And they are still friends today in Washington State, but he has never met my daughter. They never met. And he really, yeah, that's a whole other story, but he tried to connect, and I'm like, yeah, if you're not interested in, you know, being in her life or whatever. But he just pretty much left when I got pregnant. And by that time, we were back in Colorado, because we had run away a couple times, and one of the times we had ended up in Florida, and my parents had moved back to Colorado, and we went to Florida and stayed there for 3 months, and then came, and his grandma was there, his grandmother was there, and didn't like me at all. It was like, I don't know what I did, but she did not like me, and I think I was just dating her grandson, and she didn't like that. And so then we came back to Colorado, and that's when I found out, well, I got pregnant right about then. We moved in together. And he had, we started.
Did
to,
you tell?
Well, we, yeah, go ahead.
I'm looking at your bio again, and it says that that one of the people that seduced you was a stranger.
Yeah, I hadn't really gone into that much.
Okay. Did you talk about that?
No, I guess. So that happened, came back from Washington, and I think we were back from Florida as well before I got pregnant, and we had broken up, me and my high school boyfriend. And I remember that girl that I was telling you about, that when I left at 13, 14, when I left Colorado, she wanted me to have sex. Well, I had connected with her again when I came back at 17. And at that point, she was 17 years old. She was married to a 33-year-old, married to a 33-year-old car salesman. And so I went out with, I went over to her house, her and her husband's house, one night to have dinner with them, and he had a friend over, and I, now looking back, you know, I was drinking, of course, everybody was drinking, but I think there must have been something slipped into my drink, because I was raped, and I remember telling him to get off of me, but I couldn't, it was like I couldn't move, and I remember
right.
hearing, you know, people talk about that as well. So that was.
I can relate to that. I can relate to that, definitely. I was drugged one time and raped, and it's not a good feeling. You feel so ashamed. What were some of the feelings you felt after that? I felt shame.
Very.
I don't know.
Oh, very. Very ashamed, and I was confused. I remember. At one point, my friend decided that she was going to call this guy and try and blackmail him to get money. And I was like, oh, really?
No.
It didn't work. I mean, you know, here we are 17.
Right.
What's that?
That was crazy.
But, yeah,
okay,
so
what happened in your 30s? Can you go to your 30s and tell us what you were doing then in your 30s, third decade?
So in my 30s, so I've been married. I got married, so I met actually before that, a little bit before that. I met my husband after my boyfriend, my high school boyfriend went back to Washington State. I met my husband in between the time that I found out I was pregnant. So So I had gone out on a blind date with my husband, and then I found out I was pregnant and shipped my high school boyfriend off back to his mom in Washington State. Didn't know if I would see him again or not. He told me that he might come back when the baby's born, and he never did. But so I shipped him off, and then I, like, the next week went on a second date with my husband, and I told him I was pregnant on that very second date. And so he, of course, knew it wasn't his. And I think that that started the first platonic friendship probably that I'd had with a man ever. So we dated pretty much throughout my whole pregnancy with my daughter. And he would ask me questions. You know, he felt probably a lot freer than some men who have a responsibility. He would just ask me all kinds of questions. And, you know, we just had a pretty good friendship in those early days. And and then I was 22 when we got married. When I got married, he was 28. So he's 6 years older than me, which is the same age as one of those teenage boys that I was telling you about. So that was another, that was another bit of a shock to me, is because I was like, my husband is 6 years older than me. And I always thought they were so much older. But I married a man who just totally the opposite. I really wanted to, and I know that to some degree I married him for the security. Of course, I've loved him, and I've always loved him. We have a lot of issues. I think that as far as the emotional abuse goes, though, I still get some of that from him, is the emotional abuse. And I've even apologized to my kids and said, you know, I was so fixated on making sure that you guys were not sexually abused, that I think the emotional aspect of what was going on in raising my children in this household was, you know, that it was the emotional abuse. So that's been something that I've been dealing with. But in my 30s, I was, you know, happy. We had bought a house, and we've lived in our house now for 25 years. So, you know, it was the ideal situation to raise my kids in, because I was able to stay at home with them. And I would do things on the side to try and make some money. But, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you were a stay-at-home mom. And did you yeah. homeschool at all? Or did they
I
go
did
to school?
Not. They went to school, yeah. I didn't think I was smart enough to do that.
I don't have any
nowadays
questions.
They've
I'm
got
go
so...
To the panel.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to the panel again. Penelope, do you have any comments or questions for Kim at this point?
Yes, I do. And, wow, Kim, first of all, so this is just a very benign question, but because I live in Washington State, I'm thinking, where did she move to in Washington?
Do you?
Serious. Yeah, I live in Belleville. Yeah.
So I was in Vancouver.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
That's a great area, too. I thought that was on my – I was like, wonder where she lived in the state of Washington. You know, wow. And, you know, kind of picking up on, you know, Susan's comment about just going through the healing process, and, you know, Susan was, you know, could align with some of your story, especially in your childhood, about being sexually abused, and as I can, and this is lifelong business, mm-hmm. right, the healing journey. And what you just said in this last segment about some of these aha moments, I know Susan had alluded to it, like I just picked up on something about myself. And you just, you know, commented that you just, you know, you were so focused, and of course you would be, on making sure that your own children weren't abused the same way that you were, that, you know, you just had an insight about the, you know, the emotional or the verbal, you know, abuse that you hadn't been as focused on that in your marriage. And I think this is part of healing and just breaking patterns and recognizing things. And that's the journey. But, you know, you had said that. And I think, you know, we do the best we can. And now that you're aware of it, you know, yeah, your children are grown. You mentioned your daughter's 33. But I feel like it's never too late. And I think as long as, you know, we can be aware of these things and we can address them. So I think it's courageous to say, hey, I just, you know, I'm married. We have struggles, and here's something that we're working on. I think sometimes that, you know, even we're all there because we, you know, it's really hard to see patterns when you're used to, you were, you know, kind of born into a pattern where you really didn't know any different. And a lot of these patterns take hold, and it's really hard to see when you're in it. You know, it's not as hard to see when someone's observing it and they're not in it. But it is hard to pick up on them. And so, you know, we just have to be gentle with ourselves. But I think it takes a lot of courage to come on the show and say, there's things that, you know, things that I'm working on, you know, in my current relationship. And I just want to give you all of my love and support on that. I'm in the same boat with you. I think we accept what we know. We accept what we know.
Absolutely. Like my mom did. My mom accepted the sexual abuse. I wasn't going to accept that aspect. So, yeah, it continues on, unfortunately, without knowing it, without even knowing that we're passing that abuse on.
Yeah, but that's why I think you're so, I mean, you are still so committed to, I mean, we're all, we do the shows, we're all part of NAFTA because we have this lifelong commitment to healing. And I think if you're still not, that's part of the journey. I feel like we can be healed, but we're really never done, right? And I think, you know, when you're done, then you stop recognizing these things that can be difficult to recognize. So, I think that's where I really applaud you.
Thank you.
So, that
I
was my only
that.
My question, my one comment. So I'm sure Pamela wants to keep moving on down the panel, since believe it or not, time is flying by.
Well, okay. Also. Yeah, and I hadn't specified this, that so I have my one daughter, who's 33, and then I have a 26-year-old daughter. And then I also kind of dealt with infertility, which was weird after getting pregnant so young. But that's how it took so long for our second daughter to come along. She was 7.5 years later. And then we have a son who is 22. Now as well, and I never told any of my children about my abuse as they were growing up. I never shared that with them because I never felt that was their burden to carry, and I really wanted them to concentrate on being kids, you know, because I missed that, and so I wanted to give that to them. And so all of them are just now, within the last four and a half, five years or so, have heard a little bit about my story. None of them have really heard the whole story. My son has questioned me the most, though. He has heard the most part of my story. However, I did make them all take the class, the darkness to light class. So we'll talk about that.
Good.
All right, let's go.
Because now we have.
Thank you, Penelope. Let's go to Susan. They're waiting patiently to come on with you, Kim. Susan?
Okay.
You can talk about the healing now if you want.
Okay. And you know, Kim, I give you a big old hug, you know, from long distance. And I just want to, you know, kind of reiterate to what Penelope was saying there, you know. Gosh, first of all, I commend you, because if you're still married to the same guy that you married, I mean, that didn't happen for me, okay? And you just showed a lot of, you know, patience and, you know, persistence. And, you know, you get 100% credit there. And, you know, it's just hard, I think, any relationship that doesn't, I mean, it's very hard to imagine relationships that don't have a certain amount of like verbal abuse or emotional, you know, quandaries. I think a lot of couples have to work through that. So, and you started to mention about, you know, little things that you would do. Like what I'm interested in is I know you mainly are a stay-at-home mom, but did you find some creative outlets that maybe you made a little money here and there and that kind of gave you a little bit of something for just yourself?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I say that I have little jobs here and there, but I pretty much always, as my kids are growing up, a lot of the time I would pay for the groceries and stuff like that. So I would always have something going on, whether it would be like babysitting. I would take in some extra kids sometimes. Or at one point I did Avon for a little while until I started buying everything back. And, you know, and then I went into, I didn't make anything because I bought it all. And then I went into Mary Kay for a little while and kind of progressed pretty good on that. And then I, you know, again, got to the point where it was just getting to be too much. And so I gave that up. And, I also worked for my church for a while too. And was able to, you know, take the kids there when I was doing that. I did a lot of school volunteering and a lot of church volunteering. And so, you know, that those were kind of my successes in being there with my kids. And so, yeah.
Right. And you had a big family. You had three kids.
Yeah.
You know, that's a lot. It's a lot on your plate right there, you know.
And it's been now, it's been almost 5 years since I started Darkness to Light. It started as a facilitator with Darkness to Light. And I know we'll get into that, I think, as we go, I don't know if this is the part we're getting into now, but what I found now since I've started.
We've got one more panelist that wants to interact with you.
And then we'll talk about that. Okay.
Susan, are you finished? Did you have another question?
I am. And I didn't. The only thing I want to hear a little bit about is, you know, what you've done for your healing, you know, I mean, what path you've taken, whether it's just prayer, and I totally believe in that. I'm just curious.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's coming up too.
Thank you, Susan.
Yeah,
so. All right. Mary
Thank
Ellen.
Thank you.
Hi, Mary Ellen.
Okay. So, seems like everyone's anxious to hear where you've gone to, and I peeked into your bio, so I'm excited to hear about that, too. I had followed you actually in the past for a little bit, and I think I must have come across your name through NASCA in the past, so I'm really excited to hear the rest. So I'm going to let you go.
You.
I did want to say, you've mentioned a couple of times your age when you were young and the boy being 6 years older and that not being so big. I think it's huge. I think when you're talking children, 6 years is a lot. And it kind of breaks my heart when I feel like you're, I don't want to say minimizing it, but feeling as though there wasn't that differentiate of him being older. You were more same age, because I feel totally different about that. And I think that, you know, you were hurt, and that's understandable. And it just kind of touches my heart. And, you know, there was definitely some advantage on his part in many ways.
Yeah.
So my heart goes out to you for that, because there are many things that you've said that seem so wrong, you know, that were very painful things you had to deal with.
Yeah.
And then when you're not protected, it's hard to go through life looking back and recognizing that. It's hard when it's happening, and it's hard as you move through life to look back and see it.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know about you, but I think for me, that's how it's always been, right? I've had to,
yep.
because my mom told me that I had to just accept it and accept,
yep.
you know, that's just the way it is. And, you know, and basically
yes.
that's what I felt throughout my childhood is. And so even as an adult and even up until probably even 2 years ago, I did have a hard time sharing my personal story. And,
right,
and so
right.
it is still even a little bit hard for me because I even started doing this other work before I started sharing my personal story.
Yeah, it's raw, you know. I mean, I feel
yeah.
the same way. When I talk about it, it's raw. You never know what new emotions coming from
it's
it
sure better.
Or how you're going to react when someone comments.
And I remember hearing
Penelope,
another.
I was going to say, I think when Penelope said, it's ongoing. It's a healing process that's ongoing. So,
yeah. Absolutely. And I know I was listening to another survivor speak to that, and I remember him saying, and this has just really stuck with me, is that when you are telling your personal story of this abuse, you are there. You're not physically there, but your body feels like you are there because you're talking about it. And that has just always really stuck with me. You know, I know going into tonight that it was going to be a little bit more triggering than me just getting up and doing a darkness to light class. So, yeah. So I'm trying to be more aware of that. And I've just recently shared my testimony, you know, in a book. And that was the first time that I put that out there as well, is my
very
real story.
Proud of you. Yeah,
thank
very
you.
Proud of you. And proud of you for being able to handle all this with your adult children, too. I only just recently shared with my children just that I was sexually abused by my father, you know. I did not go into details, and I haven't talked to them about any other abuses that went on, but I needed to say that much to them. I was in treatment for an eating disorder that I had struggled with my whole life that reflects from my sexual abuse is what triggers my eating disorder. And I felt I needed to explain a little bit to them because they were just, now that they're adults, you know, they needed to know how does this happen, you know? You know, you don't just all of a sudden wake up and have an eating disorder. No, this is something I struggled with my whole life because of childhood sexual abuse. So,
yeah, and I don't know about you. I mean, was your husband abused as well? Or
No, he was not abused, but he was abusive. So we ended up divorced.
Yeah. Well, and I feel that as well. You know, they can't understand. And I felt like even raising my kids and, you know, like you said, too, not telling your kids, not having a husband who understood what you're going through. That's a lot to carry on your own.
It really is. It really is. Yes.
Yeah.
I think it has its tolls on all relationships, I think.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't want to take up your time, but thank you so much. And
I'm anxious to
hear your progress.
Thank you, Mary Ellen. Thank you, Kim.
You're welcome.
We've got another guest that's just joined us. Her name is Roberta. Roberta, you're on with Kim, our special guest. Do you have any comment or question?
What's her name, Roberta? Kim?
Kim.
Yeah, and Roberta.
Kim Lincoln.
Oh, hi, Kim. I'm Roberta. I'm in Oklahoma. I just got to hear a little bit. All I can say is that I'm just now opening up to where I have the courage to heal, and I'm in therapy. And it's always nice to come in on this program and listen to other survivors and know that people have gotten through things and they're overcoming, and helps me to have more courage. And even though every story is different, but what I'm struggling with right now is I have memory blocks, and I sometimes want to revisit the places, and sometimes I don't, and sometimes it bothers me because I don't know where all the places are, you know, and who I'm with and what's happening exactly, and that bothers me a lot of times. And anyway, that's where I am today. I'm almost 60 years old, and this started in my early childhood for for quite a few years. And the only memories I really have is like from probably 6 or 7 years of age and older. And anyway, I went through a lot of abuse, different forms, different people, different places. And, you know, and it's just, it really, you know, when I think about it, I used to just kind of like, when things come up nowadays, I think that I'm like telling myself, this didn't happen, or I tell myself, what I'm suspecting is worse than what I'm suspecting happened, you know, things like that. But I'll open up more and more in therapy. It'll get better. So that's all. But I enjoy listening to you. Thank you.
I'm so sorry that happened to you too, Roberta. Do you have a lot of like underlying issues, as like physical issues that you deal with?
Oh, yes. But see, the thing of it is, I had a disadvantage whenever I was born. I was born weighing 3 pounds, 9 ounces in the 60s, and I lived in an isolate. And I lived in an isolate, and that was before modern technology. And all this, it's like, I don't understand why things were ordered and things happened, you know, and why I wasn't protected and why I wasn't loved and truly loved. Yeah. And it bothers me, you know. Mm-hmm. But then I almost lost my faith, but it came back, so.
Yeah, that's hard. I mean, I think that, like I had said earlier, I don't know if you heard, but I was introduced to Jesus at a very young age, and I held on to that throughout my childhood, of course, until I started being rebellious. And then, I didn't go to church for probably 10 years or so. It was once my oldest daughter started, you know, getting a little bit older, and I was like, yeah, I want her to know who Jesus is too, because I would have that opportunity. But it is easy when you've got all these physical, I've got a lot of spine issues going on, and I've had 3 spinal surgeries in the last 3 years. So I've had a lot of these physical issues that I think are coming out because I waited so long. You know, if I would have really started digging deep and telling my story maybe a little bit more, maybe I wouldn't have had so many issues. I don't know, but that's my thought kind of on some of that. But I'm sorry that all that happened to you too, Roberta. It's not fair.
I'm still here, you know, because, you know, a lot of things happened that I feel like that were ordered, that were unnecessary. And I feel like sometimes maybe even church betrayed me and people betrayed me, and even in high places. And it hurts me sometimes because I feel like someone was in my family history for wrong reasons too. And, you know, it really bothers me sometimes.
That's the grooming.
Thank you, Roberta.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Roberta. Yeah, our time is getting low.
I'm sorry, and Pamela's Penelope, I'm sorry to interject. We also had Victoria Kelly just join us on the panel. So I just wanted to point that out.
Okay.
She's right underneath your number.
Let's see if Victoria, do you have anything to say to our guest, Cam, our special guest from Colorado?
Oh, I just I just got in here in the last second, and I mean, I'm late. I'm sorry about that to the guest. And I live in an assisted living facility, so it's never quite normal around here, whatever normal is. I guess the only thing that's normal is sitting on a washing machine. But I have a little bit of problem with the religious stuff because I was severely spiritually abused, and I wasn't sure I was going to even stay on when I was just kind of listening. So
we're not going to talk all about church. We're not going to talk all about religion.
Okay.
That's not the plan.
Yeah. All right.
But it was a big part of my story, so.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine. Yeah. It is with a lot of people. Yeah. So. But sometimes I just have to, you know, back off to take care of myself, that's all.
Well, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
That's good. Good for you. Watch out for yourself.
Yeah, we
have
to do that one as
well. So we're going to get to where, thank you, Victoria. She's going to talk now about what she has done with certain organizations that protect children and
fantastic.
So we'll get
into that.
So Kim, you know, we've gone through most of your story. Your story is kind of a lot like mine, you know. And I had to wait till my children were grown to really deal with this. I thought I didn't have anything to deal with. You know, I thought that my repressed memories were going to stay repressed, but that wasn't the case, you know. And my and the Most High had something different for me, planned for me, you know. So can you tell about what you're doing now? And did you ever go to a therapist? Did you have a therapist?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, and I still do. I still go to counseling. Yeah. Yeah, I probably pretty much throughout my marriage. I remember, this is another part going back to when I told my mom what had happened between my dad and I, and then I remember going to a counselor as a family. I remember going to family counseling. And then after a little while, and I don't even remember what was said. So, you know, and you guys are talking about this repressive, I wonder if some of this isn't too just repressed, because all I can remember about that day was the therapist coming out, because we had come out of the room and he was just talking to my parents. And then he came out with my parents and he looked at me and he said, you have a very nice family. I'm sure you guys can work everything out. So and I'm thinking, well, obviously, what really happened wasn't told, or hopefully somebody would have done something about it. But I didn't feel like I could say anything at that point either. And then, you know, like I said, after that, I got really rebellious. So it probably shortly within it was probably closer to 10 years into my marriage before I started getting counseling, because I was so just fixated, well, I'm growing my family. We'd already had Nicole, we'd already had the oldest, and then, you know, I wanted more, and I wanted definitely to have a little boy, and so we had probably been 10 years into it, and it's been a hard, and then I've been going kind of off and on, but probably more on the last couple years. As I've been dealing with a lot of spine issues and surgeries that I've been going through, and you know, really not feeling like I'm getting the support that I should get as I'm going through
I like to ask guests like yourself, when you talk about therapy, if you are using a trauma-based therapist that specializes in childhood sexual abuse or childhood abuse or not.
So I have in the past. Right now I'm not. Right now I am
doing an inexpensive route, which is basically students. So I'm teaching students some really good stuff. That's how I'm looking at it.
Yeah.
Like I'm teaching them some really good tools here.
All right. And so let's get to the darkness and lightness tonight. Because we've got 14 minutes left in your show. So we want give you about 4 minutes to talk about that, and then we want to give you another 4 minutes to talk about what you want to leave with the audience, and then we're going to go to the panel and let them say goodnight. So talk about 4 minutes about organizations that you've worked with.
So about almost 5 years ago, I heard about Darkness to Light. I believe I found them on Facebook, saw them on Facebook or something. And I was really wanting to get further into, you know, figuring out, because I've always been kind of a community person, and I'd taught grief support groups for children in my community in the past, but never let, you know, this part out of the bag of my story. So when I found Darkness to Light, I knew immediately. I just felt like this is something I've got to do. So there was an organization in Colorado that was shutting down who did Darkness to Light curriculum. And so there was nobody here that was training in it. So I packed up and went to Oklahoma for a weekend or for a day or 2 days. We got there one day, and then I took the class, which was an 8-hour class, the next day, and then we drove back the following day. And that's when I was then trained to facilitate once I did that. So I knew that I wanted to bring this curriculum to my community. And if you're not familiar with Darkness to Light, their main focus is that adults should take the responsibility. So we're asking adults to step up. You know, we're asking you to learn these 5 steps, which is really pretty easy to remember. You know, learn the fact of what is going on around your space and where your kids are at. You know, minimize that opportunity. Then what can you do to make those spaces safer? Talk about it with the kids. Start at a young age. I didn't do that so much with my kids, but with my grandkids. We started at a young age. I have body safety books that sit on my shelf at my house. And whenever they feel like they need to be empowered, then they can get one of these books. And now my older grandchildren, they're 8 and 9. And so they are able to pick up these books and read them. Most of the time that my granddaughter spends the night, I see her reading one of these books. And so that's just, it makes me feel a little bit better that at least she's being educated on what she can do with her body, because I didn't feel like I had that right to say no. Then, you know, so to be able to talk about it, recognize signs. So recognize if somebody is grooming somebody, like we talked about earlier, you know. And like you said, when you're in it, you don't always notice. So it's good to have people around you that know that you are watching out for all of this stuff, and then also reacting responsibly. So, you know, once a child comes to you and tells you that something is going on, how you react is also going to make a difference in how a child heals. So if you react, you know, like, I'm going to go, you know, kill this person, that child may love that person, you know, which I know is a controversial thought as well, but you know, they may love that person. They don't want that person to be hurt. They just want that abuse to stop. And so knowing how to react to that child when they come to you is really important. And then just about a year and a half ago, when I was at a Darkness to Light conference, I was trained in another thing. I'm another facilitator for the Monique Burr Foundation. And they've partnered. And so the Monique Burr Foundation is for children. And they've partnered with Darkness to Light to create 5 steps for children. So, you know, just in tandem, as you're learning all of your stuff, you know, teach your kids that, or your grandkids or your nieces and nephews. You know, I always say when I'm in these classes, everybody's around kids. At some point, everybody is going to be around kids, even if you don't have them in your family. You know, and so these are the safety rules for the kids, which go right along with the five steps to protecting children, which are know what's up, and that's yellow. And then you've got a red flag that says, you know, spot red flags. So, you know, just making children aware, using examples of what could happen, you know, not anything really too deep, but, you know, just little examples of something that they could watch out for. And then it's okay for them to make a move. You know, if they don't feel safe or whatever, it's okay to make a move. It's also okay to say no. And, you know, and then talk it up, talk to that, you know, tell them to talk to whoever they feel safe talking to. It doesn't have to be you. You know, if you're teaching this to the child, you can tell that child, it doesn't have to be me. It can be somebody else that you feel safe with, and let them know that that's okay. And then tell them, you know what, whoever you tell, there will be no blame on you and no shame on you. And, you know, that's
that is awesome what you've done. And thank you for the education, and thank you for everything you've helped us visualize tonight, and to learn and be educated. And, you know, we're all in this together, and we've got to make sure that our children are safe. And I just want to thank you for coming on and being our guest. But we're out of time right now, and the only time we have is to just, I'm going to open the mics and let everybody say goodnight to you. And Victoria, can you say goodnight to Kim?
Yes, goodnight, and maybe we can hook up because I'm doing some advocacy work too. So I friended you on Facebook.
Word.
You have a good night.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nice.
Yep.
Victoria.
Victoria
thank
Kelly.
You. Bye-bye.
All right, hon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Susan, can you say goodnight?
Hey, yes. Now, Kim, are you on Facebook yourself? I just now found the darkest light.
Yeah, I am. I'm on Kim Lakin, L-A-I-N.
Okay. L-A-K-I-N.
And that's where I do all of my work. Yeah, Kim Lakin. And you may see me under Kim Kreger, which is my married name, but I do most of my advocacy work under Kim Lakin.
Wonderful.
I will be friends with you either one, but I do most of my work on this one. And then I also have a Facebook page called Soar on Eagle's Wings. And I'll put out, I used to be so much better about putting stuff out every single day, but I do try and put stuff out periodically on that Soar on Eagle's Wings page as well. And, you know, just ideas for parents. Like I said, I've been kind of recovering. It's only been about not even eight months yet since my spinal surgery. So I'm still kind of in the recovery phase and trying to work back up.
Wonderful. I found you. Hey, that is fantastic. And thank you. You were awesome tonight. Okay.
Oh, thank you. So nice to meet you.
Thank you, Susan. Mary Ellen, can you say goodnight to our guests?
Yes. Thank you so much. It's been a great evening. Very proud of the work you're doing. I'm going to follow a little closer and check out your sites and what you're offering. You do classes on your trainings, is that correct?
Yeah.
On your light
so
to darkness,
Darkness to light? Yeah, there are several different ways you can do it. You can go online and do it, do the two-hour class, and that way you can stop and start. It's only $10, and once in a while we have free, you know, times that you can go on there and take it for free as well. But it's nice to take it online because you can stop and start, and right now with everything that's going on, that's kind of a nice way to do it. But we do them in person as well.
That's great. Yeah, it's always good to find something where you can educate yourself, and I'll be sure to check that out. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, I'd love to be your friend on Facebook, too.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mary Ellen.
Okay, Roberta, can you say goodnight to our guests?
Oh, thank you, Kim. And anyway, it's real nice to listen to as much as I got to listen to. And I don't come on here all the time, but, I mean, I'm just glad to know that there's other survivors and there's people that – that you know, are out there that you know, that have survived, and you know, hopefully I'll be in a position one day where I can be more helpful and useful. So thank you.
Well, I think we all can just by sharing our story. So yeah, are we Facebook friends under Kim Lakin, Roberta?
Pardon me?
Are we Facebook friends already?
No, I don't have. I searched out your website one time years ago, but I don't have Facebook. I don't have a computer.
Oh, okay. Okay, I was just wondering. Yeah, because I recognized your name, but there could be more Roberta's too.
Thank you, Roberta.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, let's see here. I'm going to go to Penelope, but first, Kim, I want to ask you, now that you're coming up, you know, this is your second time to come on as a guest, I would like to see if we could add you to our panelist list and call you sometime as a panelist to come on with other special guests. Would that be something you'd like
I'd love
to do?
To. Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd love to do
Penelope.
That.
Thank you. Penelope, would you say goodnight to our guests?
Yes, I would love to say goodnight. Tim, by the way, you did also receive a friend request from me, Penelope Economos Venice. So you're making a lot of new friends tonight. A lot of NAFTA sisters on the panel. But I just wanted to say, absolutely fantastic show. You're amazing. You're truly amazing and inspiring. And I do have to say to Roberta, you are useful. I think when we can call in and we can support and be on the panel for our NAFTA family members talking about their story, that is a gift. So I just want you to know that is important and not insignificant, Roberta. I did want you to be acknowledged in that. And I also just, for you, Kim, I just also wanted to say, I also just had my third spinal surgery. So if you want to connect with someone that's walked in those in the free club for spinal surgeries, I'm right there with you. Maybe they weren't the same one. That's a journey.
Yeah.
So you've got someone
It's
else.
Actually my fourth, but it's my third in 3 years.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's been fun. We have to talk. Yes, we have to talk.
Yeah, but definitely. I can understand that, and I can also understand being a little bit alone and not in your own family, maybe because you're so capable that, you know, when you have these surgeries that are very, very debilitating, it's, you know, I don't think people want to acknowledge that we are our patients. So, You've got my support in that, is what I'm saying. But anyway, thank you, Kim, for giving me the opportunity to, you know, recognize Kim and for all the work that she's doing. And I'm very thankful to have known you on the show and hopefully in the future as well.
Yeah, I look forward to getting to know you,
thank you
too. Bella. Thank you.
Okay, Kim, I want you to take a minute or 30 seconds and say goodbye to our audience and what you want to leave them with, a motto or something. What's your motto?
A motto? I just thought of something I wanted to just remind or tell people about that they might not know. But so another thing that I also like to put out there is that there's a law called Aaron's Law. I'm sure some of the panelists have heard that before. And it was passed like in Colorado a few years ago. And I know that there is some controversy around that, but you know, it kind of can get the conversation started in school. So if there's anybody out there who is, you know, have school-age children, to go in and talk to your school administrators and say, hey, have you heard of Aaron's Law? And what part of that law are you guys honoring? Because they're not honoring all of it, which has been a problem. Throughout the
world. Well, they don't have a stuff. So what I found out, Kim, is they have a law, but they don't have a curriculum.
Exactly.
There has to be a curriculum.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we've got
with
to say
darkness to light. So,
okay.
Thank you.
So we've got to end the show, and I want to say goodnight to everyone, and especially our guests. It's been a great night, and I just want to tell everybody to, if you see something, say something, keep our children safe. So tonight, goodnight from NASCA.